Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Unfortunately, I just made this video an hour and 20 minutes and it didn't record any of the audio. Oh, just horrible. So, I'm doing it a second time and, you know, it won't be as good as the first time. Because, you know, I lose all patience. Who cares? So anyway, I just point out, you know, that just something else you observe is that I've been observing this anyway, that I'm really bad at acquiring new habits. So I fixed like a light switch. And so there's a light switch that now works that didn't work. And I can't seem to train myself to hit the new light switch instead of the old light switch. So I'm so used to hitting the old one that I never hit the new one that works. And, you know, this is sort of the same thing. There's a glitch in my Linux, and it just, you know, it's annoying. And so it causes freezing and this and that can happen. But what happens sometimes, just randomly after a suspend, is that the microphone will disappear. Doesn't exist anymore. And I should look right at the screen there and see if it's working, okay, and then start talking. And I just can't acquire that habit. So this is like the fourth time it's happened, and it's really irritating that I just can't learn my lesson. So we're going to talk about learning and people being able to have their minds changed and being persuaded by arguments, and all of that is part of this. So there's a, you know, the antinatalist advocacy did do this convention-y kind of thing. And so I've been playing some of those videos. So we're going to play one about the idea of community. The idea of organization, I think, is probably a better way to state it. It's really not about a community. It's about organizing to get something done. That you do need in this world to be a group to really to have any power. Individuals are easy for the cops to beat up an individual. A lot harder for them to beat up a group. They can get away with a lot taking us on as individuals. They can't get away with it as a collective. It's just the way it works, you know. If we were snipers or terrorists, then yes, it would be just fine to be individuals because then you could be more effective because no one's seeing what you're up to. So if you're on the wrong side, individuals are great. But if you're doing the right thing and you're trying to change the world, doing it as a group is just a pragmatic, practical necessity because they'll kill you as individuals. They'll hunt you down and wipe you out in a sense. So you really need the freedoms that come with the constraints of organization. So organization is uncomfortable. Sometimes you have to smell other people and you don't want to smell them. They have lousy, rotten habits. They might even hump your leg. They might be doing all kinds of stuff you don't like. But the fact is you're better off with a group of soldiers, right? So I could be in a group of a squad of, 20 army men. And the fact is it's, in a lot of circumstances, I will be a lot more effective in that group than I will be as an individual. There's circumstances where rogue works, and there's circumstances where you need the momentum that can be created by a group, and especially when it comes to politics and intimidation, lots of the things that are part of being able to have a balance of power in terms of arguments and how they're made. Being shouted down, for example. A lot harder to shout over 20 people. They can shout a lot louder. That kind of stuff. So part of the conversation is about that. I started thinking about other things before making the video. I had things on my mind about persuasion and how I have in the past talked about creating a game board or something that people could play where they'd get some feel for how horrible life is, in the sense that if you included all of the substantially brain-abled organisms, that is a few hundred thousand neurons, you made a board game out of it, I'm going to be a living thing, and you throw the dice, the odds are you don't throw the dice a second time. The first time you throw the dice, it ends in death. You know, and then very rarely do you get to throw the dice a third time or a fourth time without being killed. So you don't get very far down the game board. You know, and then even if you made the game more structured to just life itself as a human, the fact is it's not like the board games, you know, that are available. Opportunity or something, these different games. Opportunity Knox, I think, is a game I played as a kid, you know, where you're seeking hearts or you're seeking money or you're seeking fame, you know, and you could go collect these things. And there was lots of ways to win, not lots of ways to lose. And that was the, you know, again, the game is so fake in the sense that the odds of winning are very small, and the odds of being just a mediocrity or a loser are very high. And that's the reality. And people should play the real game of Monopoly, which should be called poverty, because that's where most people are going to live, is in that. And they're going to watch their kids denied and deprived, and they're going to be alcoholics, and they're going to be this, and they're going to be that, and it's going to be ugly, and there's going to be all kinds of scenes and all kinds of emotions and all kinds of crying and all kinds of, you know, bad shit is going to take place. And that's going to be the reality. The game isn't going to be fun in the sense that you're going to have to recognize that in creating a life, you're really just going to create another bad story most of the time. All right, maybe that's enough said on that. There was a side angle to that that I don't remember now that was in the other video, but maybe we'll let that slide. And maybe I'll think of it later. So we'll move on to the video. And well, maybe I'll pause and see if I have any other context to add. All right, I did think of another piece I had thought of. It was just you know, some way of gaining some appreciation of the different places from which people are coming. And so I thought of soldiers in a war. And the fact is that somebody could lose a pinky, or they could lose a whole hand, or they could lose an arm, they could lose two arms, they could lose two legs. You know, you can have all kinds of degrees. And clearly, the people who have lost almost nothing might say, what a great thing it was, you know. And the people who have lost almost everything, in terms of anything they aspire to be in life, you know, it's over. They have to now become something else, a doorstop or something, a professional doorstop, you know, instead of an Olympic gold medal winner. You know, they're going to have all kinds of different appreciations for what value, you know, their sacrifice was, and whether it was worth it, and all of those kind of questions. And they're going to have different answers based on what they've personally paid for it. And sort of brings me to the subject of me and why I'm here making these arguments. And substantially, I'm here because I was informed, okay? I mean, there was a point in my life where I was a regular person in the sense that I didn't have any, psychological issue. I just had the little stuff, just the awareness of a kid, and you start to question all the crap that's going on. So I was already, you know, at five or six, I was becoming an atheist, becoming recognizing that they're just telling stories. The real world is a lot more brutal. And the fact is all of that probably made me neurotic, okay, because it made me risk averse, and it made me fear intense. You know, it made me think about, I'm going to die, and, you know, what am I living for, and what the hell am I going, what the hell am I doing this for? Is it worth playing with my trucks? Am I going to get cancer tomorrow? I mean, all that shit was in my head, and it probably did me no psychological good, and eventually I ended up with an anxiety disorder, and I spent the rest of my 60 years on this planet very uncomfortable most of the time, frankly, nauseous, feeling sick. I have allergies now, and so like all the time, I have this heaviness in my eyes that I never had before. And people probably have noticed it in my videos that, you know, I have to clear my throat a lot and all that kind of crap. And I never had any problems like that. And frankly, it's, all of that changes your perspective, because from that perspective, you know, it just becomes obvious that I'm not winning. Yeah, you know, I'm paying more than I'm profiting in any personal way. And just a fact. And I can't get out of this scenario because, you know, frankly, the addiction is strong. So, I mean, a heroin addict could look around and recognize, boy, I'm not winning, you know, but it's not going to change that they got to get some more heroin to get through tomorrow, you know. So, it, you know, that's psychology. It's hard to just give up and run away. So, and also I have a lot of reasons why I never killed myself. And they're all selfish, frankly. I didn't kill myself because I thought I was entitled to a better death than a bullet in the head or, trying to jump off of something or jump in front of a car. I was very uncomfortable with any of these choices. And I just felt I was entitled to die gracefully, that I didn't commit any crime, that I should get what a criminal gets. Give me a gas chamber, give me an electric chair, or hang me. But don't do this slow death thing, you know. Don't do this sloppy death. Give me a sure method, something that's definitely going to work. They really don't make that available. And I felt entitled. I mean, I have a right to have a civilized death. And so that was one of the reasons I didn't kill myself, was just that I felt entitled to better than something I engineer myself. I wanted the full technologically appropriate death. I didn't want this shitty scooter death. You know, I wanted a real car, you know. So anyway, side subject, but I'm just saying that this is all part of, the first players in this game are going to be people that come here with no arms and legs. You know, people have really tasted life and it's tasted really poorly. They've gotten a bad ticket, and it's a shitty ticket, and they've had a hard time, and they know what torture is, and they know they don't want to do it over and over again. It's that simple. And the trick is trying to give people who haven't experienced that ticket, you know, the cancer ticket or the uncomfortable life ticket, to appreciate that, they really don't need to force somebody to keep doing it over and over again. And that's the risk of having kids, is that your kid is going to be one of those people who's not going to have the fun ride. He's going to get bounced around. He's going to throw up. He's going to not going to have a good time on the roller coaster. You didn't do him a favor by putting him in it. That's just a fact. And they should be very conscious of that. And that's just pretty much all this argument's about, is making people who have had it good or have had it better to realize that this isn't fun and games. This isn't for free. This isn't about just collect your profits. The fact is, there's real blood on the floor, and you have to account for it. Our existence has been insanely expensive. Just thinking of the people who died the slow, horrible death from the Black Plague, brutal death. Just thinking about that alone should be enough to scare the shit out of you in terms of figuring out how you could ever do something to justify that torture. How you could accomplish something great enough to say that was worth it. It was worth torturing all those people for this spectacular whatever we're doing. And then especially now that the world is so fucking ugly, so fucking messed up, so screwed up, so crooked and perverse. It's really hard to see how it was worth torturing a flea. It wasn't worth pulling the wings off of one fly. For the human race, it's just shit, and that should be a doable argument. Really, frankly, it shouldn't be that hard to explain to somebody that there are people who are going to be harmed by this trip because there's too many people in the bus. Some of the people are going to fall out of the bus. Do you still get on the bus? Do you still justify the trip? when they're going to be sacrificed. They're going to be fed to the sharks. Do you really need to go? Do you really need to get wherever you want to go? And you're willing to throw people to the sharks to get there? And then when you bring the animals into the subject, like I said, with the board game or something, it's just so horrid. The attrition, the amount of time the conscious organisms spend in terror and in horrid pain, being killed over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. How could you say you think it's a good idea to keep killing things? Yeah, you're for it. It's acceptable. It's an acceptable price for you to prance around on the internet thinking you're important. I mean, that's just so ignorant. And frankly, it's coming from a lot of people who you have to say they know better. They know it is very expensive. They know people are too reckless in their reproduction. They know they don't think about it. They don't take any responsibility for it. They know it's all bad. And here they are defending it. Those people are fucking evil. They're not just ignorant and stupid. They're evil. They are feeding on something else's pain in some deeply psychologically sick way. That's probably enough of a premise. I believe this video starts with poor
audio. And answering these questions.
Poor audio. So I won't play the very beginning because I think the audio sucked. And such. So leave us begin.
Is putting them into practice, however, as anyone who's been involved in communities revolving around a moral or social issue,
So again, I guess, something I didn't say in the first video is maybe the clear and easiest distinction would be to get rid of the word community and talk about organization. Because community really is just a lot of self-support stuff. The community things end up being so distant from the cause. So I could bring up things like the women for, with breast cancer. And so much of what they do is circular. Like the organization exists to feed the organization, and they really don't provide much money for research or therapy or help. And it really just ends up being they spend all their money on flags and pins and social gatherings.
Much easier said than done. Having a healthy antinatalist community is in all of our interests.
So having a constructive and useful organization, that keeps us within boundaries and, keeps the message clean and direct and doesn't sidetrack it. Those are all important things. And so you could argue that there's some legitimate question, in terms of the fact that you do have to create a message that may be less than complete, because the fact is you do have to slide people into things, and that pushing them works sometimes, but pushing sometimes their reflexes, I don't want to be pushed, so you have to kind of slide them into it rather than push them into it. So you can't be too aggressive, all this kind of stuff. So there's lots to talk about how to send a message and how to do things that are constructive. So you could argue that in the past, I remember I've always been pro-gay people kind of things. I always thought that it would be, yes, if you can find somebody who hurting a gay person or being bigoted against them or not giving them a job because they're gay, then you should prosecute them, find them, do whatever you can, because that's just too stupid. So I would have always voted for that kind of stuff. But there was a group called ACT UP, and to me they did everything they could to present a very negative image. They were so sloppy and so rude and so obnoxious that, in my opinion, they did more harm to the cause than good, because they were asking for way too much, way too quickly. And so organization is probably a better word, because you really have to be careful how you organize your war plan. And that's what it is. It's a war plan. You're planning on having a war against an ideology, and you want to try to do it strategically, reasonably, and effectively. And there's rules about that. You have to use the right sword for the right battle. Short sword up close, Different sword, different circumstance.
Below me on the screen, we're joined by Ash Wickety.
All right, this is a lot of background stuff that I don't think is terribly important. So Amanda is Amanda, of course. So she did the Effelist movie and obviously has done a lot of work in creating communities and organizations. And then this other woman in the bottom here in the green is a mostly started as a animal rights advocate and then migrated to the subject of, in a sense, human rights, not to be born. And then the other one is basically someone who deals with a community of people who don't have children, but not necessarily people who don't have children because they understand it's stupid and evil, but people don't have children because they can't have children, which doesn't have much to do with the subject. But again, it has something to do with how you keep people in an organization and have a effective message saying, like, even though it's incidental, like not having kids, explain to people that life doesn't end because you can't have a kid is a great thing to do. So even if you wanted kids and you can't have them, but you're explaining that there is a life without them, that's going to be a positive message in the sense that it might provoke somebody who was a little negative on having kids to be a lot negative on it because they realize they don't need kids at all. They can do this, have a real life without them.
Leave at 8:40 to go. Well, 8:40 UK time. It's obviously much different time zone.
I'm jumping ahead.
And a hello to Ash. Lovely to see you. And a hello to Sharita. It's lovely to finally meet you. So, in attempting to answer this question, and in an attempt to sort of dive.
I thought Amanda did a really good job with this. There's a little spiel here, and it's a really good spiel. So you really probably should go watch the video. In terms of recognizing the flaws in the communities, the, you know, the conflicts that exist, and the fact that this is all part of the job of organizing is having to find a way to do all of this without shooting each other, you know, without getting so obnoxious towards each other's purposes that you do a bunch of shooting yourself in the foot kind of crap. Something like that, anyway, we could say. So I'll play some of the spiel.
Say that there haven't been some extremely encouraging recent developments. This conference, which has nurtured so much positive conversation on so many really the most challenging and controversial aspects of antinatalism today, is a real step in the right direction. Communication is, I think, a key part of the prescription for curing what ails antinatalism. But regardless...
So I don't think antinatalism is ailing, so I just completely disagree with all of this rhetoric that somehow the antinatalist is a losing perspective. I think the majority of human beings are becoming quite aware of the burdens of life. They're becoming obvious to them much earlier in their... and because of the internet, because of all this open communication, because all of the dark side of human beings is being exposed, all the lies of Superman and all this fake crap is being sort of recognized to be all a bunch of engineered crap. That these icons are not icons. The politicians are so naked now, it's just so obvious that none of them ever was wearing any suit of any dignity. None of them had any character. You know, it's all so debaucherous and ugly when you start revealing it's the real true colors of the human race. And all of that is being exposed. I mean, even the internet now has gotten so tacky, all these fake videos, all this AI duplication, all this spam. You know, all these things are such clear negative messages about what humans are about and how conniving and scheming and greedy and grubby and disgusting they are. And so that's all positive, frankly. And again, you'll see it in people's behavior. So in Japan and all these other countries, there's a ton of people, by percentage, half the population says screw getting married, screw having kids, screw all that stuff. I'll fuck a robot. You know, they're actually buying robots to have sex with and have a relationship with. Because, yeah, humans suck. You know, so there's lots of positive signals that it doesn't take long for a human being born now to recognize the world's a stinking, smelling cesspool of shit. That's all quite positive. They're not getting fooled into living some lie for Mohammed or doing this for that or for that for that. Now, the third world is a different case. So the intelligent world isn't breeding, isn't maintaining their population, and the ignorant populations are still, you know, way in excess of population stability. And they're the real blight. They're the real threat to the future. The ignorant are the threat. I mean, going back to, Jesus, names is really Charles Dickens and the Christmas Carol, you know, ignorance and want. These are the things that are the real threats. And so what this really is to me, what effulism is or antinatalism or any conversation about taking responsibility for the harshnesses that are in the game of life, is it just about being intelligent, being smart enough to recognize this isn't free, that I can't have without somebody not having, that everything costs something. You can't have your electricity without the air getting dirty. You can't do this without these consequences, and recognizing the fact that life is full of consequences, and that the fact is, if you think you can roll these dice with somebody else's welfare, and you can't just pretend, well, it came up, my kid gets cancer, so what? Not my fault. You rolled the dice, okay? It is your fault. And that simple recognition that nobody sensible would take these kinds of risks with real children. The children were real before they're going to procreate, and they had to really do this thing where they had to roll dice for that child. Roll the dice for this child. We're going to put a straw in its pocket. Good luck, bad luck. You know, alcoholic, disability, disease, death. You're going to put these straws in its pocket. You're comfortable with that? Child molester. Yeah, I mean, these are real risks that whatever you're going to create is going to be one of these things, a monster or a victim. Why would you create monsters and victims? Because that's the odds. The odds are it's going to be a monster or a victim. It's not going to be something called a winner.
I think we're going to have to apply a very great deal of determination and patience if a healthy antinatalist community is in fact what we want to create. So listen, we have real issues. We have huge disagreements.
So I think this is all nothing. Yeah, you're going to have disagreements in any organization, so you have to figure out your plan of let's not stink on each other, let's not offend each other too much, so we can all sit in this foxhole, and then when the right time comes, we can all point our gun at the Nazis and shoot them. You know, it's not that arduous a task to recognize that you just need to have certain organizational principles that say, this is what you're allowed to do in the foxhole, and this is what you're not allowed to do. So, you know, not that complicated.
We genetically engineer humans in the hopes that procreation can be turned ethical. Others don't think that that's even possible and are concerned that there might be extra ethical concerns, along the way for that plan as well. Some of us firmly...
Yeah, so some people, want to help your son win a gold medal, but they also want to rape your daughter. So, obviously there's a problem there. You know, they're partly on your side, and then the other side is really negative. So, you have to recognize that some allies are not going to be very useful for very long. So, yeah, so let's be pragmatic, okay, and we'll fight alongside the Russians or whatever, whoever we have to kill Nazis. But you have to do that recognizing that you're not going to want them to own your organization. You're not going to want them to own your hardware or your guns or your swords, because they might use them against you. So, I mean, we gave Osama bin Laden a whole bunch of resources and power and to fight the Russians. And then he used those very resources of organization and money and weapons to, knock down our buildings. So, you have to be careful about who your allies are and always be mindful that frankly there are going to be people who might be an asset for 10 minutes, and that's about as long as it's going to last.
Very beginning, and I believe will continue to cripple us for a long time to come. People are afraid to be anti.
I don't think there's any crippling part, so I think that's just a completely unnecessary rhetoric. Like I said, I think we're winning decisively. In the last 30 years, the mindset of the average person has gotten so much more cynical, so much less gung-ho, marching in the parade kind of nonsense. There's very few parade participants anymore, okay? I mean, people have found out the game ain't what it was sold as. This isn't the 1950s anymore, or the 1940s, and those tired, little, silly, superficial memes of "Let's go, human," just don't ring anymore. So I think it's a decisive victory, even without our voices, and the fact that we are now pointing that cynicism at the real target, which is the nature of existence itself, the whole idea of competing DNA molecules, this whole idea of taking territory and conquering and being the fucking Olympic medal winner in the first place was all wrong-headed. That it isn't about celebrating the winner, it's about weeping for the losers. That's what the rational mind does, is recognize the horrific cost, not the splendor of the saluting the flag. So I think we're winning more than we're losing. The ground we're gaining may not even be our own energy, but the fact is the ground is being taken. The front line is moving in the right direction.
Antinatalists. People are afraid to speak about antinatalism. And our attrition and recidivism rates as far as people leaving the...
So this is part of the whole psychology I was describing before. The fact is I didn't need an organization. I didn't need somebody to tell me to be an antinatalist. I didn't need them to describe to me the horrors of life because I tasted enough of it myself. And that's all I really needed. Yes, witnessing, caring about, right? I had bugs that were my friends and my pets. I had a lizard that was my pet, okay, and a neighbor squished it. Thought he was doing us a favor. those events stay with you. I mean, it's still here as part of who I am. These events, these little pieces of information that make it clear to you. And, but the fact that I personally endured the agony of defeat, in the sense that I did have circumstances that crippled me and broke me. And I had a great deal of pain to have to endure just getting through each day, just getting in and out of school every day. I don't even want to go into how psychologically difficult it was for me the last few years of school and just how much I hated and despised waking up so I have to face another day of that shit. And that's what did it. I mean, obviously all that tasting of the negative made it really easy when I realized that that's the price paying and other people are paying this price and they're doing it, they have it worse than I have it. And would I force that on them to have anything I have? Would anything I own, would I pay that as a price? So I can have a new car, I can have this, or I can have that, I can have this good experience, I would drag somebody through the nails to have it. And that argument to me was the finishing argument. That finished the argument, because no way, I'm not going to torture somebody so I can go to Disneyland and, win a $500 prize or something. I'm not going to do that. I won't do that. I wouldn't do that. It's stupid, and I know it's stupid. And that's all these natalists need to fucking appreciate, is that's what they're doing. They're assigning a horrid risk and a horrid outcome and pretending they have some reason to justify the pain they're opening the door to, the torture they will in fact be causing by their overt defense of an activity. The activity inevitably will create this as an outcome. The blood will be spilled, and they're voting for it.
Person, community. I think a lot of it comes down to communication and being willing to set our differences aside and just kind of focusing on the common goal. And, you know, if we can even agree on a couple.
Yes, see, that's the trick, right? You really can't agree on a common goal, because to me, the common goal is the realization that it's all the sentient life on Earth that's our responsibility. They're paying for it just like your kids are paying for it, or your neighbors are paying, they're all paying for it. It's not like something I can sit there and pretend that some of the pain doesn't count. Like, I could even have a war with Nazis and I can't count the pain of the dead Nazis, the dying Nazis, or the widows, or their kids, or, you know, we blow up, Berlin, and we blow the legs off little kids. How the hell do you ever justify that? How do you justify saying, yeah, well, we won the war? Yeah, we blew some kids' legs off, but so what, right? That's worth it. We're worth it. Can you ever say it? I can't say it. I can't even imagine it. I can't even imagine anything you're going to do in this universe that's going to justify one kid with his leg blown off. What are you going to do to say that's a good, that's an acceptable price? So what? I blew a kid's leg off. Big deal.
Common goal for me, that would be educating the public more about antinatalism and normalizing it more.
Yeah, that's all there is education. And education really has to do with just getting religion out of people's heads, getting the nonsense, the pro-life propaganda out of their brains, and realizing you're not winning by creating losers. That winning the gold medal is a lie, okay? It's not a great feat you just accomplished. You just made a bunch of losers. That's all you did. Nothing else took place. You made a bunch of other people feel the agony of defeat. A bunch of them. Some of them are dead. Some of them are crippled. Some are paralyzed for life. And you're holding your gold medal saying, wow, what a great event. No, it's not a great event. It's a tragic, horrid event. Nothing to celebrate. Unless you're somebody who feeds off of cockfights and dogfights and gladiator wars. I mean, unless you like blood footprints all over the place. Nothing to celebrate.
For rare occurrences, because that's what gets, viewers' attention. It gets people talking. But
she was talking a little bit about how they put the most, animated videos, the most, where it's most aggressive and the most conflicting, but most of the time everything is just fine and we have nice, polite conversations, and that's part of the propaganda, to kind of show the aberrant, experience rather than the real one. That's sort of clickbaity, but that's all part of, some of this is you have to be a pragmatist and say, well, look, if everybody else is doing it, I'm almost going to have to, because you can't see me unless I try to be just as loud as the other people are being, right? I mean, you can't allow yourself to be completely overshadowed by their bigger signs. I mean, there's a point where you have to say, well, we have to invest in a bigger sign because all the other signs are covering our sign. We have to buy more billboard space. So there's a point where you have to concede. Yeah, you got to fight the fight on the territory that exists. And all the trolls and the liars, they all are throwing banana peels and all kinds of shit onto the floor to try to fuck up the fight because they don't want it to take place. And so there's lots of stuff that's being thrown around and done just to, disturb the fact that there's a fight taking place, because they don't want their side to lose. And one way to guarantee your side doesn't lose is to make the fight impossible.
Jeez. Now, I suppose when it comes to being child-free, in a way, it's probably a little bit easier but then again, it's hard to tell. So, because being child-free...
All right, so this is just about psychology and how difficult it is to be an abnormal, okay, to be an abnormal. in any kind of society. And so her organization is more about, yeah, just how do you deal with not being normal? And in some sense, they're talking about how antinatalism is a minority opinion, when in some ways it's really not, but whatever. The outcome isn't abnormal. There's lots of people producing the same outcome, which is I don't need to have kids, and I don't need to make kids, and I don't need to pay somebody else to have kids, and I don't need to do any of that shit. I don't need to invest in the future existence of the human race. I'm just kind of concerned about taking care of my one sentient brain and making sure it's not tortured too much. That's enough of a job. For a lot of people, that's as far as it goes. I'm not saying that's good, that their mind is that narrowly focused. I'm just saying the fact is, you know, if that works, if that makes them sterile, you know, then great. So a lot of this is just about dealing with the psychology issues, and that's just a fact that we all have this psychology coming in. So there's the antinatalist community. Unfortunately, the first members are going to be the members with no arms and legs. They're going to be the members most damaged by life, most who have tasted the worst of it. And they're not psychologically, you know, they got a little bit shell-shocked. They've all been damaged by the fact that life has hurt them. And some of them are bitter and resentful and angry and lots of things. And they all have their psychological issues. And therefore, they're a little bit unstable and unreliable. And maybe they can be pressured to be moved here or pressured to be moving there. And they vacillate all over the place. Lots of examples of antinatalist, just human beings who are insanely passionate about anything. And so they just pick something. They're passionate. And then they're go exactly 180 degrees, and they're passionately 180 degrees. I mean, my sister was sort of an example. She became she was kind of just a selfish cunt, and she became this religious fanatic kook, you know, complete 180 degree swing. Not that she was intellectually atheist, but, it's just this insane, you know, a passion for life in one direction, like, you know, go out and experience it, and then a passion to, you know, be completely controlled by a bunch of dogma. It was just a bizarre switch. But you just call that the fact that that's what psychologies do when they've been beaten up a little bit, when they failed a little bit, when this has happened or that's happened, they become damaged, and they're not going to be capable of functioning properly all the time. So you have to recognize that, yes, the first members might not be the the best members to be soldiers. They're probably not very well equipped to fight the fight.
Involved in. They are very diverse and very varied. So even though the broad umbrella is people without children, it has, some of them have included people who were not able to biologically have children for whatever reason, and also people, some of them, not all, because they're one of the partners, they have children, so those are included, but that particular group is only for,
so, you know, it's really not a related subject in the sense that it's, you know, it's very stretched to say this has anything to do with the philosophical subject of antinatalism, and because they're basically procreation, they're just disappointed in their inability to manage their own relationships with people, and therefore they can't, you know, they lost their kids to a divorce, or they lost their kids to cancer, or they lost their ability to have kids because of some biology, and it wasn't really anything about recognizing that having kids is too big a responsibility, and there's better things to do with your life. There's almost an obligation to do something better with your life. There's already enough harm, and there's already enough kids in jeopardy that need to be rescued. The whole Big Brother thing. There's a bunch of kids on the tightrope right now that need your help. No reason to put a new kid on the tightrope. I mean, it's almost that obvious. How many kids are being deprived even basic nutrition in the world? why would you spend all your resources manufacturing a new kid when all of those could be saved by a little bit of intervention on by you? I mean, those are real arguments. I mean, I don't want to get into the just adopt argument, but frankly, you know, if you really need a kid, there's plenty to go rescue.
And also, you know, in the group itself, because they're Facebook groups, the admins will generally put out a question every single week. It's like, what was a small win that you had this week? So it's not just being about, about being child-free. Obviously.
All right, so community is a really different thing. It's really alien to me, okay? I got no need for community. I don't need other people. I don't need fellowship. I don't need any of this crap. I just, you know, I don't need to play cards in the foxhole. I don't need us to sing songs in the foxhole. I don't need to hear stories about your wife and your kids or your story. I don't need any of this shit. I don't need any, you know, we're all brothers in the cause kind of crap. I don't need any of that crap. It doesn't do me any good. It doesn't make me any stronger. No, I just want when the whistle blows, we all run in the same direction and do our job. You know, and I, you know, frankly, if you got some kind of foot powder or something so I can, you know, keep my feet working or keep myself in shape and you can help in that way, well, then that's great. If you can stop me from getting cancer, please do so. Thank you. You know, but other than that, I really don't need anything else. So I don't get the whole community thing. I just don't get it. I'm just not a people person. So to me, it's sort of alien. Look, this all might be personal again, right? Because, you know, I had a couple of close friendships when I was a kid. I mean, it's very rare that I found anybody interesting, especially when I was very young, nobody. And then sort of in adolescence from 10 to 13, I had a couple of friends that, you know, we were really tight. And we'd go out and on adventures together and fight the world and fight, you know, the nature world or whatever we were doing. And it was tight. It was, you know, you felt like you could be yourself. You could say what you thought and all that kind of crap. And it worked. It was comfortable. And you know, both of them moved and I was left with nothing. So I guess in some ways had to become hard because, I had to learn how to live without that. And I did. I guess it's the easy statement. didn't have a choice, so I did it.
Thanks, Reed. And I guess I hadn't been considering until you went through like the different ways that people came to the child-free community. I guess I hadn't been considering the diversity within the child-free community, the diversity of experience and perspective.
But she concedes that there's very few that are there because they're antinatalists. So, you know, what's the point? If 1 in 10 is an antinatalist, then it's really just about dealing with having to live without being a servant to children, that somehow we have to find something else to do with our time, and it's just so hard to find anything to be interested in. Too silly almost. The world is so open, you can be anything now, you can do anything, you can learn anything. I mean, it's just, you know, you can play video games, there's so many things you can do that how could somebody say I am project deprived. I mean, there's so many projects you can take on.
Even worse if you're an antinatalist, because you are, you know, probably the only one in your group of child-free people who is antinatalist.
Right. So she's conceding the argument, which is pretty dismal. But anyway, it makes the whole thing, okay, the child-free thing is interesting because it's an organization, but that's about all it's interesting for. So it really doesn't have anything to do with the subject.
Absolutely do not, vibe or resonate with that. But there has to be a healthy balance. So, you know, like the groups that I'm a part of, yes, you can talk about, you know, the challenges that you face as a child-free person in a very pronatalist world.
Right. So it always has to be in this context that you can't say anything politically incorrect. So you can't say religion is ignorant. And you can't say all the stuff that really needs to be said if you're going to enlighten somebody to recognize that we have a broad responsibility here to all the sentient creatures on this planet. If we're going to justify our pro-life position, if anybody has a pro-life position, They have to justify it by acknowledging that they are saying they would inject a kid with cancer for the future of the human race, that they would, cut a lion cub's head off, that they would justify all of the horrors that take place. They would do surgery on a woman, in the past, people have tumors removed without any anesthesia, that they would do these things and have them happen over and over and over and over again. And that they would impose this grief and this horror and this torture because they think there's something to be accomplished through all of that pain and suffering, that there's somehow their gold medal is worth all of the failures. And the simple argument is, how can anyone rationally say that? It's preposterously evil to say it. I mean, it's more than just ignorant.
Having and enforcing those boundaries is really, really important. And also giving consequences to people who don't adhere to that.
Whatever that is, consequences. Sure. Well, whatever. Like I said, I don't think that has anything to do with recognizing that, yes, it's, I've used the example of ACT UP, the different organizations that didn't do any good to the cause, okay? So, I mean, you have to have boundaries to how people are going to behave to be useful in your cause. So there's people that are pro-Trump that are very bad icons for Trump, okay, like the racists and whatnot. And you could go on the other side and find all kinds of people who are very bad for the cause of liberalism because they think everything's a free lunch, and that nobody has to work and that somehow all jobs are fun. They're just really bad for the cause because they're so silly.
Stop Having Kids group, we have a Facebook group where we can bounce ideas off of each other, plan events, things like that. We've done dine outs.
See, now that's all the part that is just where, in my opinion, as an organization, you lose all focus and the focus just becomes financing the organization. and that's where all the money end up being, it's like all these charities are like that. I mean, 80% of the money you give to the charity runs the charity. It doesn't actually get to the thing you're supposed to be fixing. So it becomes very unproductive as an organization in the sense that it's really just a bunch of you're creating jobs for yourselves, you're employing each other, you're doing all kinds of things, but it's all circular. It's not for the cause. It's just to keep you moving. You're really not gaining any ground on the thing you're supposed to be fighting.
Goal. I mean, we've gone out and pulled buckthorn. It's an invasive plant that was brought here, and it helps, other animals and the environment. So just working together, and I think doing projects and like seeing that you completed something or that you improved conditions for somebody else is a really good feeling, and it's really unifying.
So this is getting to be what I would put in the category of baby talk. So this is kind of like people who think they've done something wonderful for a cat by imposing surgery on it and doing all kinds of torture and torment. Like it's already in bad shape. You're going to torture it some more so it can live a couple of weeks and then die of something else. I mean, it's just a little bit too silly. And you're going to feel all proud of yourself because, yeah, for a moment it's going to be pretty. But the rest of it ain't too goddamn pretty. Okay? And the average ain't too goddamn pretty. I mean, there's lots of videos, we could see this live eagle in a nest or something, and I'm sure they cut the film off, when things go all wrong, when the maggots start eating the babies or some other thing is going on, because it's all for the purpose of just promoting how spectacularly fun all of this is, and that there's no accounting for the fact that through known real attrition, we know they're going to die. I can go out right now and I could videotape a bunch of lion cubs. And the fact is, most of them, 8 out of 10, are going to be dead before they're grown up. That's just a fact. So if we really follow them around, they're all doomed. A huge number of them. Jimmy, Jody, Sally, Simpy, Dimpy, Wimpy. They're all going to be dead in some horrible way before they even... matured, before they even know what it would be a lion. That's okay with you. Well, it's not okay with me. It's not acceptable. I don't need to hear anymore. I already know that's not acceptable. So if we can't fix that, we're done playing life.
And jumping into antinatalist outreach or tabling or things like that, but building that foundation and that trust and that confidence so that you can start having conversations about antinatalism with, you know, everyday people on the street.
Yeah, so whatever. I think it's all good to plan. It's all good to have nice messages, pamphlets, you know, all that kind of stuff. Great, excellent, fantastic. I don't have a real complaint with that. But you don't need to call yourself a community to do that. You just need to be an organization to do that. All right. So, I'd rather talk about organizing people of common purpose rather than creating communities of people with common purpose.
Sort of little chapters popping up all over the world that are really influenced by Stop Having Kids. So it's clearly resonated with people in a big, big way. I want to see as much of that happen as possible. I want there to be a healthy online antinatalist community, and I want there to be a healthy offline antinatalist community. I've tried.
Well, to me, obviously the message doesn't really matter whether it's personal or not, and this just gets into my argument that I'm not very comfortable with street advocacy in the sense of being in somebody else's face, imposing. I don't like imposing, frankly. I don't like people to impose on me. I don't really impose on people. I could never knock on somebody's door and sell shit. You know, I'd always feel like I got to pay them for their time. I mean, here I'm bothering them. I should be paying them for their time. I should send them a letter saying, well, look, if I offer you $5, can I talk to you about solar panels or some bullshit? I think it's just rude to impose your philosophical view on people, to yell it at them at the street. If it was a religious asshole telling me about Muslim gods and all kinds of bullshit, I'd be pissed off. So in some sense, I don't like that street shit. Because I just think it is a little bit rude, frankly. And the internet provides you this opportunity where, yeah, somebody has to click on the damn thing, okay? It's none of it's in anybody's face. They have a reasonable selection of books to pull off the shelf. My book's not any bigger than their book. There's no aggression involved, and it's a simple thing. You either want to hear the message or you don't want to hear the message. You're willing to listen or you're not willing to listen. So I think it's a much better medium for sending messages is to be polite about it and not be impositional about it. I mean, I suppose if you put a chair and a table out on a sidewalk somewhere and just invited people to join the have a little conversation, but, you know, as soon as you got the bullhorn and the signs, it's a little aggressive.
I mean, just in this last year, it's grown significantly. I think the stakes are going to be higher for people to be, to create identities, known identities around this subject. But look, I mean, this in-person antinatalism has come a tremendously long way. I mean, if I think back to 2011, you know, there was a very well...
And this is part of the labeling thing, too. You know, it's almost okay. Some of the politics turns into we have only the choice of this left and right thing, okay? And it would be better if we had, I was starting a political party, and I, in the sense that I thought it's a good idea to at least have the option. But, you know, once domain names start costing $20 a year, I said, fuck it. I'm not going to pay for a name that may never be used. But I would call the party Fairness First, you know, because that would be the underlying principle, that the first concern of a political organization is let's first try to make deserve have something to do with it. So let's not punish people for working hard. Let's not do all this other stuff that some liberal person might think is justified. Let's make deserve have something to do with it. Now, somebody doesn't deserve to be disabled, but if somebody was a drunk driver and they got their leg ripped off, maybe they don't deserve quite as much, as the person who lost their leg to cancer. There's real arguments to be made that, some of this you have to pay for your life. If you don't pay for it, you don't earn any appreciation, okay? If we start punishing the innocent instead of punishing the guilty, we're not going to create a sensible reward and punishment system. doesn't matter that the guilty are stupid. You have to punish the people who did the crime if you want to deter the crime. And the fact is, there has to be real consequences. And so it's not fair for people who have kids to force people who don't have kids to pay for them. So that one might be a real sensible first act, is to make people who pay for kids, who have kids, make them pay for them. Make them pay for all the schools and all the shit, the cops and all the other crap that we have to pay for to manage these monsters that they create. They should be paying for it. And then we could even have a policy that says it's perfectly fair to say, look, if you're a good citizen and you don't cost us anything, you don't have any reckless children before you're 15 or 19 or whatever, maybe we'll pay you $5,000 for not being a blight on civilization, for not causing a bunch of social welfare issues. So, yeah, don't beat a woman, don't rape any women, don't do all these certain little things, and we'll give you $10,000 for not being an asshole. I mean, all that kind of stuff is what we really need to advocate for. And the same, I would say the same argument here is, if we're going to try to advocate for a perspective, I think you have to include in that perspective something that where somebody understands that there's really good reason to be for this cause, not only for your personal life, but for all these future people who will live in a better civilization if people aren't, you know, obedient to religious dogma and having kids for no good reason, and we're politically saying that's okay. We don't need a license to have a kid. We don't need to pass a test to have a kid. We don't have to do a damn thing but be an arrogant fuck. You know, maybe that shouldn't be the policy. You know, and obviously neither political party represents that perspective. You know, obviously both political parties think it's perfectly okay to recklessly produce children.
But I just am, I'm a little cautious, and I wonder as to the growth, you know, just where, if there's a stopping point.
I mean, to me, too silly a worry. This whole idea that we're not winning, that the momentum isn't huge in our direction, the memes are all heading in positive directions for anybody who's anti, okay? The anti-movement is on the march, okay? Everybody's anti-something because the world is full of stuff to hate. It's just a fact. This isn't good enough. The civilization is turning to shit. There's lots of people who are aware of that, and so that's a very positive that's a bit of positive momentum we should be able to take advantage of and get to even a higher speed of this Sisyphus ball rolling. So this idea that we're fighting from some negative condition or some negative position and it's everything's heading against us and we're heading backwards, I think it's just absolute bullshit. We have every advantage going forward, except for the huge liability of the imported morons. So without the huge liability of the imported ignorance, our civilizations are becoming more and more aware of the cost and more aware of the price of sloppiness and recklessness. And people are becoming more and more hostile to people being unnecessarily rude and wasteful. The whole green vegan movement, okay, is not dead or dying. And it's only damaged by the fact that we are placating, feeding, fostering ignorance, rewarding ignorance.
There was such a term called antinatalism. I think from a young age, I was probably one, but only in 2020, when I learned more about what antinatalism was, and this was because a lot of people, they saw my work and they exposed me to it, and I was like, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Right, so she's part of an organization that doesn't have it as a principle, but herself, personally, she certainly gets that there's a lot more to nataling than just having fun. You know, that this does represent a philosophical position, and one that may contain an awful lot of arrogance and bravado that is completely misplaced. This is not some little fun game you're playing. shoving kids onto tight ropes is not proper entertainment.
We can run into a little bit of a problem in this situation. So even though, I mean, if I was walking around on the street and I saw a sign like that, because it resonates with me, I would definitely go and inquire about what this is all about and sort of join in. But I think having...
It's kind of hard to imagine anything that would be surprising from my perspective, you know, just because we have been inundated by all of these perspectives and all of these points of view. I mean, I haven't even watched the news for 10 years, and you can still know what's kind of going on in general terms. I mean, I don't care about who slept with who and who's part of this and who is part of on some list somewhere and who's in somebody's black book and all this kind of crap. I already know they're all assholes. And, you know, how big an asshole they are, well, I don't really care whether they're 6 foot or, you know, 5 foot five on the asshole scale. You know, it's all dirty, it's all messy, it's all sloppy, and, you know, so none of that really matters. And you really get the, you know, been there and done this, okay? I mean, been there and done this. All these crises that come up and we're all supposed to be worried and paranoid. I mean, you even see it with weather, right? I mean, they promote the weather now and they make money off the weather. And so they just keep hyping. Everything that's coming is going to be the big one, the big earthquake, the 50 miles. They're going to be, a, you know, 400 feet of snow and this and that. Blah, 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 blah. And it's all this hype. You know, because it's all about selling and making money and graft and, you know. Again, more reason for somebody to be just cynical as hell. How anybody could be optimistic looking at the future. Amazingly silly person.
Yeah, it should not. It should be done in such a way that we are not, we're not being perceived as some activists who are really wanting to push, have our own agenda that way. It's just, it's mainly to raise awareness.
There really can't be any own agenda to it. It is a philosophical position. All you're doing is recognizing that we've acquired this knowledge of this obvious fact that there's a bunch of torture going on that nobody paid any attention to. And it's really not that complicated an equation. You're either voting for torture or you're voting against torture. And you're recognizing that, yes, all this stuff humans do is kind of just silly. I mean, we went to the moon. It was all a big thing and ooh, do-do-do and all excited. But then we found out, just like Christmas, it wears off and it's all a big fat pile of crap, and maybe we shouldn't have put all those lights in the yard because it just cost, you know, we got our electric bill and say, shit, you know, $20 for that crap, it ain't worth it. You know, and you start figuring out, well, you know, what the hell did it accomplish? You know, did we really advance anything? You know, we killed 3 astronauts and you know, what else? You could just say and pissed away a lot of resources. Did we really advance anything? Did we really go anywhere, get anywhere? And the same thing you could just say about all this stuff in the future. Where's it going to get you? The Higgs bosons are not going to stop torture. All of this crap is not going to really fix any of the real problems that exist. And then once you start recognizing there are real problems, and that they're not going to be, there, you can't just sprinkle your little religion over it and it's all better. So that's the big argument, is that there certainly are less people, even if they say they are religious, that aren't really religious in any way that they really think God's coming to the rescue.
Yes, but I guess that's where the work really needs to be done. You know, how to do it in a way where the focus really is on raising awareness and it's not really to...
It's raising intelligence, because again, it just takes a little bit of intelligence to recognize you don't want to torture somebody for your entertainment. So again, this isn't a tough intelligence test, right? I mean, you're just basically asking somebody, would you really cause somebody great harm and discomfort to go to Disneyland? I mean, would you break their leg for it? What would you do? Would you break their finger for it? What's the limit of how much harm you would cause another sentient being to have fun? You know, how much is your fun worth? And the fact is every tiny bit of pleasure we gain in our lives is insanely expensive. The amount of organisms being tortured at the very moment you're having your orgasm, you know, in that little tiny bit of space, that little bit of time, you know, you can't even measure it. It's so expensive. And do you really see any intelligence in somebody investing in something that is expensive? Does it make any sense that anybody would buy this car? That anybody would put their kid on this roller coaster? I mean, you can't do it if you have any kind of reasoning skills.
You know, between the two groups, they kind of often want nothing to do with each other. And part of the resulting thing from that is that there's been this tremendous gender divide in antinatalism, where there's like antinatalism is for men.
Yeah, well, the internet's for men, and so that's part of that. So, you know, so you can't really. I mean, I don't think there's much to judge there. I mean, it is unfortunate that women do gravitate to, you know, baking cakes and, you know, having chit chats and, you know, whatever. You know, so instead of going to, you know, pregnancy showers, you know, they're having anti-pregnancy showers. You know, they always do have to turn it into sort of a cartoonish event. And, you know, that's part of just how women are raised, and they're raised to be caregivers and to be all interested in, you know, these comfort foods and, you know, with all this kind of crap. And, you know, men are usually focused on getting a job done and, you know, having the responsibility to finish it. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and women grow up with a lot more optimism, I guess I would argue, which I don't entirely understand, because they get periods and they have all this other grief that's piled on them. And it's really hard to understand why they're so fucking optimistic. Where men, you know, frankly, most of the time, you're, as you're growing up, you're finding out that, oh, my life is just going to get worse and worse, isn't it? You know, once I get out of school, then I got to go to work 8 hours a day, and then I got to do this, and I got to do... I mean, this doesn't sound like a party at all.
And child-free is for women. And I just think that is so toxic to what both sides are trying to build. And so, like, you know, especially if there's any kind of...
Yeah, I don't think it's toxic, because I don't think it's on purpose. So I think it's completely fixable once... And the world really is, again, this is another place where you can see huge reason to be optimistic that this whole gender shit isn't that big an issue. Yeah, there's a few people on the outside who are clinging to some need to preserve some role-playing crap, but most people are pretty comfortable with fuck this role-playing crap, and that we are just brains, and we should be able to communicate, and we should be able to get past any idea that somehow, because we have a few different hormones running through our body, that somehow we can't, you know, speak any common language. You know, we really don't have to be from different planets. You know, we can both, you know, go to the moon and try to understand that, yes, we're both in an alien environment and we're not going to get everything we want, and they can't have everything they want. You know, it has to be some sort of compromise.
Okay.
Nothing.
Sharita, I'm worried about your... not worried. Wary of your time. So you do have to head off to work. So one thing that I was going to ask, you did talk a bit about people coming into, well, obviously growing the child-free community.
Oh, wow, this is just a little bit too boring, frankly. So again, this child-free thing, when it's really childless community. So it's not like they tried to be child-free or they're trying to live child-free. They're just trying to get over the emotional difficulty of being disassociated from being a regular normal person. They can't be normal anymore, so that's what they're upset about. And the irony is that in most of the civilized world, normalcy is frankly 50-50. Okay, there's a lot of, half the people don't have kids.
Meeting in person, and I think this has worsened after COVID, because you know, people now really hesitate to interact with each other in person, and they have a lot of anxieties and fears. And
yeah, well, frankly, that in-person thing, I don't see the need for it at all. Just don't get it. Sorry, just don't get it. I mean, the internet is completely open. You can video call, you know, cell phones, people are texting, you know, people are connected all kinds of ways. You know, it's almost like electronically you can, you know, one person could be wearing a device and you can, you know, you can use your app and see what their heart rate is, see how many times their pacemaker turned on. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous almost how connected people have become. And so, I mean, I don't see any downside potential that somehow they're becoming too distant from each other, you know, when it's almost too intimate on the internet.
So that can be a very good strategy to sort of move forward. And I guess for when it comes to antinatalism, the question that I really have is that because, you know, like Amanda mentioned, there is an intersectionality between child-free and antinatalism, but also there is that divide and toxicity.
There's nothing intersecting, okay? I mean, they go barely parallel to each other, okay? They really aren't anywhere. All of, you know, they really don't have any common direction or common purpose. So one of them is just a help group for people trying to adjust to doing something claimed to be abnormal. And, you know, the other cause is a deliberate willful effort to be abnormal and to be proud of being abnormal and recognizing that the rest of the world is frankly sick and depraved. And frankly, I'm gratified that I'm not one of them. I'm damn happy I'm not a common, regular, stupid, normal human, because frankly, that would make me a scumbag.
Because there are a lot of people who are parents or who are also antinatalists. So I suppose, where do you draw the line? Like, would you...
Well, of course, acquiring the knowledge a little bit too late doesn't mean much, right? You know, it doesn't really matter. So frankly, I wasn't a vegan when I was born, and so, you know, clearly I trespassed against the poor animals. You know, I mean, frankly, I could blame my parents, you know, but whatever. The point is that I did, you know, participate in this foolish act, you know, so it doesn't matter when you decide to be a good human. You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the fact is the quicker you do it, the better. And, you know, you can't clean up your past messes. They just are a fact. And so what? Nothing you can do about the past. You can only try to help the future.
In a community that's like that, and is the purpose really to bring like-minded people together, or is it to raise awareness and...
Yeah, so that's the real point. Are you just there to placate and help people be abnormal, or you're there to get something done in the world? So yeah, okay, I'm choosing get something done. So that's the organization I want. Get something done, that's the one I want to join, the Get Something Done Club. All right, so anyways, probably enough and such and so forth and whatnot. So it's all good stuff in a way. It's good for people to talk about what it is to be an organization, even if they call it a community. You know, I think it'd be better if they start thinking in terms of organized, think of strategy, mapping out a battle plan, try to find yourself a General Patton or something, find a way, you know, to win the war, and that's the whole objective, and to do it in some sort of rational and disciplined way is all positive stuff. And the idea is it's hard to map this field, right? This is a boxing match. And like I say, there's a bunch of people, a bunch of trolls and assholes who just want to fuck the game. So they've thrown a bunch of landmines and banana peels and all kinds of bullshit onto the floor. And so it's a little hard to map a strategy, you know, when you can't guarantee that you're going to be able to, you know, not slip on some kind of bullshit that somebody's going to pull. You know, there are lots of trapdoors and nonsense. So it does kind of fuck the idea of having a good, fair fight. But whatever, that's the way it is. That's the environment we're in. That's the real tricky part, I guess, is to understand that it's very hard to sit there and say this worked in the past, or this is the strategy that somebody else used, or da-da-da, because all of it is so nuanced, and so you always got to recheck your balance. You know, it's fighting on a rocking boat. you know, and it's hard to calculate, well, the boat's going to tip this way and I should punch with my left instead of my right so I gain extra momentum. A lot of calculations to make about what the right strategy is going forward and how to basically do the best you can to incentivize people to be motivated, to do their job, to do what they can. You know, all of that crap, and not be pressurizing people, not be pushy, not be shovey. You know, try to do this as efficiently as possible. Well, guess what? You're just not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to give that question to the AI. You know, what's the best strategy to convince everybody to be a decent person and not cause torture? You know, you can't submit that question and the AI is going to give you the perfect answer. It just ain't going to happen. All right, so it's just a general playing field, and all we can say is we know what direction we want to go in, you know, and we want to try to make sure we keep going in that direction, and let's try to avoid shooting each other or punching each other, and let's recognize that we are stronger, okay, as a group. Gangs win, okay, individuals lose. So that's part of it. That's just an absolute truth. Okay, that you do need a gang to survive politically, and that's a real way to win in politics, is to have a gang. You have to organize, you have to have a gang, or you're not going to win anything, because the cops will just kill you. All right, so that's enough said. All right, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. It's all, you know. More talk is useful at this point. So good. Talk about it.